Hello, caller.
This is Nick. I just wanted to make a comment and then ask a quick question, I guess. I wanted to say that we're eating the Uncle David squash for dinner.
Oh,
and, perfect.
Also, that the Burpees Butterbush has done really well, and a row cover has been the trick for getting it to ripen a little bit better here.
Okay, this is... Then, okay.
For the butternut squash. And then I was just wondering if there was a bean that he would recommend for just a bush green bean. I always grow provider, but I was just wondering if there was any other...
Good one, Nick. Thank you.
Thank you. Perfect question.
Did you hear that, Herod?
I did. I guess I'm glad that someone besides me has the same opinion so I can, about the squash. That's great. In terms of green beans... You know, provider is, you know, just so, it is just so reliable. And that's why it continues to be in everybody's catalog unchanged. And it is fairly, you know, it's fairly early. There's, you know, most green beans are pretty, you know, they're a pretty guaranteed bet. For me, I've been actually spending quite a bit of time dabbling with some of the French filet beans. Mm-hmm. And just because they, believe it or not, produce like crazy, and they have this small bean, you know, just really tender, crunchy, crisp thing that I found that kids really love.
What varieties?
Well, we've got a couple that are really interesting. The Conquador, which is a yellow variety. It's going to be a little later than a provider. And then we have another one which is purple. And it's such a deep, 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 deep purple. It's called Velour. And they're just fun to have in the garden. And so oftentimes what I'm doing is I'm growing provider as my sort of standard crop. And then I'm throwing in a few other beans that just make that, you know, I only need 4 or 5 feet of them to just overwhelm me with them. To have some of these French filet beans. And they're just these really small beans that just are really slender and they just have amazing flavor. And then the other bean this year, I was trialing a whole number of yellow beans, wax beans in my my home garden. And, you know, I went through this whole patch of new varieties and I saw this one that kind of wasn't a new variety, but it had kind of thick pods and I thought, that one's gone by. And it turned out, you know, I have sort of blind labels. It turned out to be Golden Butterwax, which is the, you know, heirloom wax bean. And it is just the most amazing flavor. Out of all these new release yellow beans with all these praises, the Golden Butterwax, even though it is a thicker potted bean, it's by no means any less tender. And the flavor is better than any wax bean out of the 30 wax beans in the trial.
Wow.
You can't beat it. And I sort of went away shaking my head, going, wow, in 100 years, we haven't come up with anything better than that.
Wow. Oh, so does that answer your question, Nick?
He's off
the line. Okay. So what other varieties do we want to know about? Oh, we'll do... To potatoes. Let's do potatoes.
Okay.
Potatoes.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there are people that really like those finger potatoes, and other people say, what a waste of space. And so, you know, so tell, what are your favorite types of potatoes and your favorite varieties of potatoes?
Well, I love potatoes, and many people tease me because they ask me, what did you have for dinner last night? I say, let me guess, you had potatoes. And it's true. I pretty much eat potatoes almost daily. I don't know why, but this year it's interesting. We have a couple of the new varieties actually are very good. I'm often a little bit, sometimes a new one is never as good as an old standby. In the old standby category, for us in Maine, the Kennebec potato is really the most consistent, reliable producer. High yields, and it's also got some late blight resistance.
Yeah.
It's an old classic. It was actually bred kind of a hybrid with a wild strain back in the, I think in the either late 40s or early 50s. So it's got this bred in late blight resistance. And you can see that driving down potato production areas. If there's been late blight in the season, you'll see fields and fields of dead potatoes, and then you'll look over and you'll see one huge field that's still alive, and that's the Kennebec.
So if
you're worried about disease, that's one that I tend to rely upon as a backbone. But some of the newer ones, the Augusta potato, it's not just because it has the same name as the capital of Maine, but it's a beautiful little potato. I say little, it's again, smaller, they average, you know, smaller than a baseball, but they're just these yellow-skinned potatoes with these beautiful pink eyes. They just come rolling out of the hill. They're all about the same size. They're perfect. I rarely have any disease issues with them. I rarely have any kind of blemish at all on the potato.
Do they store well, too?
What's that?
Do they store well?
Oh, yes. I'm still eating them. I'm probably going to have them sprouting in my basement, probably, if I don't eat them all, but sometime in May. So they'll definitely keep through April in my basement, and I've never really heard anyone say anything bad about them. But a lot of the market growers here in New England, it's become sort of the new Yukon. It's basically become the new Yukon Gold in terms of popularity. People really love them.
Okay.
So those two, you know, can be buffered. You know, you can bank them with a few other, you know, I like to grow a wide range of potatoes. Purple Viking, beautiful potato, large. It's an old standby. You pull it out of the hill. It's got these beautiful purple skins that have these sort of white and
white.
You know, kind of white pink streaks. So it looks like almost like a potato zebra coming out of the ground, and it's an amazing baking potato.
It is.
Baker.
Purple Viking is for baking.
Makes wonderful French fries.
Oh, I
in
need
the
a
oven.
Good
oven fries, I guess.
Oh, I need a good baking potato. I thought I was got some sea potatoes that were baking potatoes last year, or you know, and I dug them up. And I went, these aren't. So yeah, okay. Purple Viking.
Those of us who like the blue potatoes. And the red potatoes, the Adirondack blue, just a beautiful blue potato. There's just so many good potatoes in our catalog. It's hard for me to say where you would go wrong. I mean, we definitely pick them by flavor. This year, the one I don't think very many of us had grown is this one called Anushka. And it's just sort of brand new potato, came out in the last couple of years, and I'd never grown it before, but this season it was, it's an oblong potato, and it's another yellow skin, yellow flesh potato. It's just got that combination of what I call flowery texture, but also has some of the moistness or wax, a little bit of the waxiness that a fingerling has, so it's almost like the best of all worlds, and it's my new favorite potato. So potatoes are one of those things where if you have room to try them, why not try 2 pounds of, you know, of this and 2 pounds of that? You know, it's like, you just can't go wrong.
Oh.
You know, there's so many different uses for them.
Wonderful.
Yes.
So what other vegetables we need to talk about here? Huh? What?
Peppers.
Peppers. Peppers.
Oh, peppers.
Peppers. Oh, yes. Peppers.
Oh, that's always a hard thing for all of us in the Northern Tier.
Yeah.
You know, there's really, and it kind of goes year by year, but we've been really, you know, that's one of the king of the North is always, you know, everybody's go-to, and I wouldn't turn it down. You know, it's a 70-day pepper. Great. Staden Select, which we're happy to have back this year. We kind of been able, you know, it's one of our seed productions that we contract with small growers for. And it's available sporadically, but we have it this year. It's another classic. These are both open pollinated. I rely upon those, you know, for potatoes in the off year, but we for peppers in the off year. But we also have another recently bred open pollinated called Piecework.
Piecework?
Yep, piecework pepper.
Okay.
Sweet pepper, bell type, and it was bred cooperatively in at Cornell with a farmer in New York, and it's great, and it's like a 60-65 day pepper.
Okay.
Excellent.
Which is, you know, which is early. You know, we really can't delve too deep into the late peppers here.
No.
In Maine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got to be consistent and hearty.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
Peppers, unless you have really a... Oops, I'm sorry. We have a caller on the line here, and again. Maybe.
We did.
We do. We just...
Hello?
Oh,
hello. Welcome, caller.
Okay. There's something I want to say just real quick. I know a lot of people don't really look at where they're getting their seeds. You know, they just grab whatever looks pretty. But I want to say something about Fedco. A number of years ago, I got some delicata seeds, and I planted them. And these were not seeds from Fedco, by the way. And it turned out that they were apparently crossed with gourds.
Oh, I had them that year, too.
Yeah, and of course... The problem is I looked at that seed grower the next year and I thought, well, why didn't they even say anything? You know, mistakes happen, things happen, but nobody even warned us that, you know, we shouldn't be planting these, say, again another year, that it wasn't an environmental condition, but it was actually the squash themselves. And I've never had that problem with Fedco, never. So I just think they're great.
Yay!
Thank
well,
you.
Yeah, the delicata is a real specific case of where the small farmer and the small, you know, seed producer came to the rescue, because what you're talking about basically was the almost the entire supply of delicata in the U.S. got contaminated with bitter gourd gene just from natural outcrossing, and they Whoa. Were either gross or bitter, or and one of the folks that we work closely with is a fellow named Frank Morton, who has a seed production company in Oregon, and he had saved his own stock of a pure line, which he has selected, which we carry. It's called Zeppelin Delicata.
Okay.
And you know, he and a few other folks basically kind of single-handedly kept the good delicata going, and his strain is really one of the best, and we're very happy to carry it. And,
huh.
It's just that's the type of thing that, you know, small farms and small gardeners and maintaining seed, those are the success stories that come out of doing that.
Yeah. Well, that's what you're promoting. You know, that's what's so amazing about your company, because I know when I look at the seed catalog and I look at your website, I'm thinking, you know, these seeds, I think I know, I can trust them. It's sort of weird, but I know small growers are growing them, and it's a cooperative, so it just seems like a win-win, you know.
Well, we try to be transparent. I think the caller brought up, you know, a good point about where seeds come from, and we try to be transparent about where our seeds come from. On each variety, you'll see a little number in a circle at the end of the description. And that number in a circle relates to a scale 1 through 6 of, you know, the higher numbers being like multinational type companies and the smaller numbers being either small growers or small farmers or farmer, you know, family-owned businesses. And so the number relates to where does this fall on the scale of seed production. So if you only want to support, you know, small farmers or locally grown seed, you know, if you buy all number ones, you know you're doing that.
Wow.
And if you buy a number 6 or a number 5, you know, we're very clear about that which type of company is supplying which type of seed. It doesn't mean that the company that supplies Silver Queen corn isn't necessarily inherently evil. It's just we want our customers to know this is what we're doing, this is what we're offering, this is what you're buying.
Very
and we
open.
Want them to be educated about it as much as we're educated about it.
Wow. Yeah. Pretty amazing. Okay, we have
I just want to jump in with our underwriters again. Support for Northern Gardening comes from Buck's Hardware, offering a full selection of gardening supplies, organic options, and weather-hardy annuals and perennials when the time comes. More information is available online at buckshardware.net. And also from our friends at Edward E. Thorson Incorporated, contractors working to fill landscaping needs in the Northland and are celebrating over 60 years of serving Cook County. 387-1644.
You know, about seeds and how to choose and how to do your seed catalogs, you can call here at 387-1070 or 800-473-9847 or online at WTIP@boreal.org.
There you go. Can we jump off seeds for just a few moments and move to maybe trees? You know, like trees. Apple trees?
Okay.
Well, you can. What do we want to talk about?
Always, always looking for a good winter storage apple.
Well, you know, our tree department, our tree branch, as we call them, really is known for offering apples of flavor and a whole slew of heirloom or classic varieties. And so many of them are excellent keepers and have multi-purpose use. If you go on to our website, FedcoSeeds.com, and choose to enter our tree division, there's just so many beautiful pictures and descriptions of uses. It's, you know, and there's so many of them that are wonderful that it's hard to pick a favorite, and it's hard to pick one that only one that keeps. I think for me, my favorite keeping apple is definitely the golden russet, which starts out a little tart, but then by about February, it's about as sweet as a raisin.
Yes, that's amazing how that happens, isn't it? you take a bite as you put it into storage, and you think, how am I going to get through a winter with you?
That's right.
And then, but come spring, it's like, how have I lived without you?
I know, so. and that's one of the great things here. We're talking on the coldest, probably one of the coldest nights of the winter, we hope. Last night and today for us out here and for you out there, you know, that's what also we have in common is we're looking at our pantries, looking at our canned tomato sauce or our trying to find some apples to make some pies, and that's the reward of growing your own.
Yeah, and I'm taking it that all these trees, they're on a good root stock that could handle deep winter.
Well, in our catalog and online, you'll see that some of the varieties have choices of rootstock, meaning there are some that are on semi-dwarf or dwarfing, and those are hardy semi-dwarf and dwarfing. But our standard rootstock, which is a mature-sized tree, a full-sized tree at maturity, is on Antonovka or Antonovka rootstock, which is recognized as the hardiest rootstock, pretty much. You know, I'm not going to guarantee it, but that's recognized as pretty much the standard for zone 3 up into zone 2 hardiness, but definitely zone 3 hardiness. It just depends on the variety. Sometimes the rootstock is harder than the variety, so it's important when you're choosing apples for zone 4 and zone 3 to look at ripening dates and hardiness of the tree, because sometimes that Antonovka rootstock is quite hardy, and sometimes the variety can be less hardy than the rootstock.
Gotcha. Yeah. So folks should look at their, you know, ripening date as well as their blooming date, so that they're not froze out in the spring, and then their rootstock.
The standard is it's hard to know exactly what's going to do well in your area. But definitely doing some research for fruit trees to to see who what other folks are growing those types of trees. There's an organization called the North American Fruit Explorers, NAFEX, which is a group of just people who are way into fruit, and lots of folks in the Zone 3, Zone 4 area who have tried and trialed so many different types of fruits, and many of our fruits, most of the trees in our catalog are hardy to Zone 4, and some to Zone 3.
Yeah, we need Zone 3.
Yep.
So
I would say there's good selection in there that can meet those needs.
Very fun. And that's called the North American Fruit Explorers?
Yes, it's a good organization for people to join so they can share experiences with other growers and gardeners to find out what's been working for them. And it just gives them people a way to, talk with the other home gardeners and growers to, so they don't have to make all the same mistakes.
Yes.
They're definitely willing to share about what's worked for them and what hasn't.
How fun. And, Heron, we just had another question come in via email from a caller who's taken us back to seeds.
Yep.
And her question is, what are good carrots, and what's a good way to plant them?
Well, I'll start with the second part there. A lot of folks are finding that the key to good carrot germination is steady, sustained moisture. In other words, not letting the soil dry out and crack.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people are finding that sowing your carrot seed, and depth is definitely a concern. I think a lot of us end up planting our carrots a bit too deep. And that's a concern. Some folks have found mixing some sand into the bed, just the top little bit, raking it in, allows them to get their carrot seed at the appropriate depth. It's not per se that the carrot seed itself is going to germinate magically somehow better in sand, but a little bit of a lighter soil allows the carrot seed to kind of not get lodged into a heavy clay too deep soil.
Mm-hmm.
But the sustained moisture, folks are finding that here in Maine, that covering the bed with some row cover immediately after planting, watering it if you don't have moisture, and then covering it really keeps that top inch from cracking and drying out.
Huh.
And it really increases your germination and your stand.
Yep, the old timers here, when I first moved up, 30-some years ago, they taught me to put a board.
Yep.
They planted in a row, they watered, and then they put a board down.
And it's the same, it's exactly the same principle.
Huh.
It's just that with the board, sometimes, you might miss the emergence date, and they might get squished underneath the board.
And then they look yellow and crinkly, and then you have to give them sunshine.
What about, do you offer seeds with that little clay on the outside so that
pelleted?
Pelleted.
We don't do the pelleted seed. I believe some of our seed has, one of our suppliers applies not a treated coating. It's like I think one or two of our varieties has it's a colored coating. It's just like a clay thing that they put on the seed so you can see it in the soil when you plant it.
Oh, okay.
It's not a treatment. Most of our varieties do not have that. But we don't do pelleted seed partly because it's extremely expensive. And the other thing that we find with it is that the germination on pelleted seed is actually quite low. If you look on most pelleted seed packets, it'll tell you the germination is 80%. And it's a great thing for commercial growers, and most of my friends who are microgrowers rely heavily upon pelleted seed. We found for the home gardener that the price of it is pretty prohibitive. But in terms of varieties,
yes,
we love our carrots, and we've had a couple new ones this year. The standbys are our Scarlet Nantes and our Red Corps Chantenays. you know, those are just wonderful OPs, OP carrots. And, of course, for hybrid carrots, the Mokum carrot has always been, you know, the best early yummy carrot that nobody can not continue to munch away in the garden. You have to keep yourself away from that part of the patch. This year we have a couple other really wonderful early carrots, Napoli and Jeanette.
Hmm.
And these are also Nanti's type carrots, and they're just fabulous. And they also happen to be organic seed. We don't necessarily choose things just because the seed is organically produced. We pick things by flavor, and those two are just really excellent. Napoli is well known for its ability to produce in not just the summer and the fall, but also into season extensions if people are doing cold frames or hoop houses in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeanette, just amazing flavor, beautiful, beautiful, perfect roots, and like just basically the survivor of no foliage diseases at all. Just a beautiful, strong top. We often have some foliage diseases in Maine that take down the tops and can really just ruin a whole stand of carrots depending on the season.
Oh, that's
so Jeanette is just fabulous and extremely healthy. In our trial this year, it was one of those things where you're walking down the row and you go, oh, no. And then there's this one just standing straight and tall, and it also happens to be a fabulous flavor.
Wow.
Well, knock on wood, we have been pretty reliably disease-free up here, mainly because of our winter. So, but Heron, we have to, it is coming close to the end of our time.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And you have been such a fun guest to have on. Thank you for sharing your time and your knowledge with us. We've been looking forward to this for quite a while. And we've got another one coming in under the wire.
We're going to do this. So how to start onions, growing conditions for onions, how to store onions. How to store vegetables in general without them getting mushy when taking out of freezer for over the winter?
Well, that's a lot of questions. That's a lot of questions. Let's just start with some onions. You know,
that was how to start onions.
Yeah. Let's just start with that. We can address the other ones at another
program.
Time.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you my trick, which I learned from my coworker Roberta, who is just a fabulous grower and is always perfecting new tricks. And we take what we call here a black crate, which is a bulb crate, and those have become somewhat ubiquitous. And I put in a grain bag on the bottom, mesh grain bag, and I put a couple inches of good potting soil, a full spectrum organic soil. I use, you know, potting soil, not a light mix, but something with enough fertility.
Mm-hmm.
And then I actually broadcast with my fingers. I take a pinch, and then I rub. Almost like I'm sprinkling herbs into a pot of spaghetti sauce. I sprinkle some seeds over that, and then I do the same with some light dusting of potting soil on top of that. I found basically that onions, yes, they definitely need heat. You definitely need to start them more early. One of the sort of troubles that gardeners often have is that we don't start our onions early enough.
Okay.
And
yes.
Oftentimes we're talking. Sometimes it can be February. Sometimes it can be March. And they just need that steady consistency of something in the realm of 60 to 80 degrees to keep growing steadily.
Okay.
So it's really about warmth early. And I find with a lot of folks, if you can't grow them yourself, onion seedlings are great. And buy them from a good seedling grower in your area.
Yeah,
I
and
agree.
Then transplant them. They work great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming. We are out of time, and let's hope you have a good growing season this year.
Yes, we thank
stay
you.
Stay warm out there.
Yeah,
you
we'll
too.
Stay warm.
And all those questions that came in and comments, we will save them for next month. Remember, we're always here second Thursday
from 7 to 8 p.m.
So we'll get to you. Thanks for calling in, and thanks for listening.